きしめをかけて燃える街にあとわずか届く叫びを耳にして帰ってきたぞ帰ってきたぞウルトラマン。敵は必殺技の贈り物大地を飛んで流星パンチ近くに立ってウルトラチョップ凶悪怪獣倒すため帰ってきたぞ帰ってきたぞウルトラマン。
Hello, you are listening to Ultra Q episode 53. My name is Red. I am joined by Mel.
Hello.
I'm also joined by Brad.
Folks, I think you'd find that the Monster Attack Team's definition of monster has been liberally corrupted to include actual people that are dissenting opinions. They're just shooting missiles at anybody these days.
Yep. Kishida has he's gone off the rails a little bit. Lost his mind.
Have you considered that humans are the real monsters?
Ide voice. Alright, well, coming up this week on the return of Ultraman, we have got more snow monsters, more snow kaiju. We have got the return of an old friend, and we've got people getting into weird car crashes and not listening to Go's advice.
Some people are just really bad at their job.
Some people are just really bad at their job and are put in charge of the Monster Attack Team, maybe. But we'll get to it. Pull the curtain back a little bit. We just recorded a Mirror Man podcast. I have not necessarily watched anything this week. I've watched things, but and played things and read things, but I'm not, you know, not finished with any of them. I started reading Dragon Ball. It's pretty good. I didn't realize Chi Chi was Ultra 7. but she's got Ultra 7 attacks. That's pretty cool.
Familiar faces every series you see now.
Yeah. I've got new, you know, this was like getting into Gundam and suddenly seeing it everywhere.
Yeah. It was funny when we played anime music quiz yesterday, and we just got Kaiju Girls for whatever.
Yeah, we did get Kaiju Girls. that was funny. I have a bone to pick with anime music quiz about Code Geass. You can't play the compilation movie openings and claim that that's Code Geass.
That's the worst. They also do that for if shows rerun and the rerun has a new OP.
Fucking nightmare.
My favorite, though, for Code Geass is the third OP that's there for like two episodes that nobody fucking remembers, but I, for some reason, remember perfectly fine.
The best thing that happens is when they hit you with the first Haruhi OP, which is not the OP for season one. It is the OP for the first episode that they aired. It is Miracle Mikurin or whatever.
I actually remember, and not as evidenced by yesterday, not the actual first OP from season one.
My favorite is people trying to guess what Gundam I put in the thing.
Yes.
Or going, Jesus Christ, this is some old fucking boomer shit. What did Brad put in? Then it's like, what the fuck is Blue Comet SBT Laser? This isn't a real show. You made it up. And I'm like, no, it's very important.
The thing is, those ones are, I keep thinking to myself, well, that's my kill. These are my killers. These are my things where I'm gonna get these points and no one else is. And then sometimes it's like Zambot 3 or Maku Ross, and I'm like, well, I mean,
yeah,
or Turn A Gundam.
Turn A Gundam. That did happen. Yes.
It's for me. It's like the Magical Girl Kids anime. That's the sleeper killers.
Oh yeah, because right, the Precure ones are really annoying to anyone who hasn't watched any of them, because they all say Precure, but there are a million pre, that doesn't help.
Yeah.
But yes, I don't know how we got onto it. I took a swing at Anime Music Quiz. That's what happened.
AMQ is a fun time. Me and my friends have been playing that for like a year and a half every few weekends. Mm-hmm. It's a good time.
Yeah. All right, well, that's kind of me. I haven't done shit. What's up with other people?
I've been in the middle of a lot of things that I don't really want to talk about yet. Watch more Teen Titans. I guess I'll give a quick update just because we did actually get to the end of... we got to the end of, like, the Terra arc or whatever, which...
Do they deal with Defeat Shrug?
Yes. Well... Yeah, actually, yes, they do, but I know that doesn't really stick. But we all were kind of blown away at how short of an amount of time Terra is actually with the team, and how fast it is before she like betrays them or whatever, and that whole thing wraps up. But instead of like revisiting that as an adult and being like, oh, this is actually like a lot less like, you know, a lot less time or, you know, like taking that sort of stance on it. What I think actually our takeaway was is like, oh, wow, they actually do a lot to make you feel like she's on the team and actually friends with them before they do the she betrays them and joins the like Deathstroke and all that. And like really sell it pretty well for the amount of time that they have in two seasons. Because we all were kind of shocked that like, I think it's like 3 or 4 episodes between when she officially becomes a member of the team and when she sides with Slade, and it's like, oh, wow, like, when we were kids, we felt like she was there way longer. Like, all of us individually, it was kind of interesting. The other thing, we have noticed that there seems to be some sort of Totally Spies-esque quota for Starfire being restrained every episode, and it's gotten shockingly... It is to the point where... She is chasing after a dude with, like, reality warping powers that, like, is causing a storm. And, like, he's flying around on, like a hover motorbike. And she's flying after him. And I literally said, there's no fucking way. And then lightning starts to strike. But instead of it being a regular lightning bolt, the lightning wraps around her and then, like, pins her to the ground. And I was like, come the fuck on! Lol. It's so, like, we keep joking about it, but, like, we can't unsee it. It happens every episode. Weird, but yeah, we're still having fun with Teen Titans, so
that's classic making kids show stuff.
yeah.
Like anytime there's a tentacle alien thing, it's like, okay, that's gonna wrap around Starfire and then throw her somewhere, and without fail every fucking time. It's so weird.
Well,
Mal, what are you up to?
Yeah, again, because of Mirror Man, I didn't have too much, but I'll just give a quick update on some literature ends of things. I've been picking away more at
Return of the Three Kingdoms.
Return of the Three Kingdoms. They're back, baby.
It's the sequel.
But yeah.
And then you learned that the Three Kingdoms actually didn't return. They're different kingdoms.
I mean, they learned that by meeting the old kingdoms that have now returned.
Better named the same.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm picking it up again because I was like, oh, wait a minute, GP's going to get to the Three Kingdoms Gundam a lot sooner than expected, so I need to burn through that better. But yeah, I finally got to past the Battle of Red Cliff, so, you know, important milestone.
Hell,
Still only a third of the way for the book, somehow. There are still, technically, there's still not Three Kingdoms, but you can see the shape of it.
Yes.
Because there's de facto... two kingdoms, and then, like, one of them's who's going to be the other kingdom. But, yeah. Picking away at that. That's just so it goes. Also on the bookend of things, I did finish another book this week. As a follow-up to another book I forgot to bring up. So I'll just say, do you know what's a really shitty book, to be honest?
Oh, The Father's Chore.
Yes, you know what's a really good book?
Tehanu?
Yes.
I need to read Tehanu.
The Father's Chore is really boring, uninteresting. Kind of rote fantasy shit compared to like the previous two or three books, so I wasn't a fan.
I certainly seem to remember that after how fucking sick The Tombs of Atuan was, Father Shore felt like kind of a letdown.
Yeah, it's too much of like, well, this is about the story of the true king, and Ged is his Gandalf.
Mm-hmm.
And then like a decade, like 2 decades later, she comes back and writes Tehanu, the final book of Earthsea, it isn't. And it's like deals with the fallout of the Farthest Shore in an interesting way, while also being more of a sequel, like spiritually and thematically, to Tehanu by, you know, no, I mean, to Tombs of Atuan by like having Tanara as a protagonist again. Except this time,
The girl from Tombs of Atuan? Oh, nice.
Yeah. She's the point of view character now, again. And so it is like, you know, a follow-up to Tombs of Atuan as much as it is like one to the Farthest Shore, which is cool.
That's cool.
Except also, Ursula K. Le Guin has become more of a feminist in that time. And this is very apparent in the book. Some people may feel like she's beaten the head over it a bit, but I still think the work is good.
Okay.
A lot more trigger warnings on this one. Holy fucking shit. Some bad shit happens. And there is very much a lot of, damn, the patriarchy fucking sucks in this book. But, you know, it's still, like, all the whole good.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that the thing she's saying is bad. It's more like, damn, you're not being subtle, are you? Which, you know, to be fair, subtlety is for cowards. But, yeah, it's cool.
It was just a book I sometimes noticed on a shelf of, I don't know which of my parents, if either, have read them, but just this book of just this, of all four of the Earthsea books, because they're quite short.
Yeah.
The Tehanu art is just fantastic. And I can't wait.
Is it like the big tome, like hardcover one?
It is not hardcover. Let me see if I can find that. Which is see,
because the one I had is like a big illustrated, like,
yeah,
collection of all of them.
I was listening to the shelf by genre yesterday, and I think one of the comments on it was like, you know, so maybe these illustrations, some of their choices aren't the best tonally for the scenes in Tehanu they are depicting.
This is the edition I've got, and all my life. I've had this, basically.
Okay.
Yeah, that one's cool. Also, just an aside, like, I was thinking back on, partly because of, like, the Wizard of Earthsea shell by genre thing, I just, like, remember there was a parallel thing with Ged, like, failing to save a kid with a cold, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And then proceeds to like kill 7 dragons and become a dragon lord, and he comes back and everyone has a festival, and his friend is like, well, who's the friend who's like the kid who died?
Mm-hmm.
He was like, damn, I didn't know you're so good, and he just immediately feels like shit.
Yeah.
It just reminds me of like a discussion of episode 33 of Return of Ultraman, where we're just like, Ultraman can save the day and fight the kaiju, but he can't actually save, like,
yes,
the people on the ground.
Yeah.
I think that's cool. I think that's a cool thing to have in your mm-hmm. works, I think.
Yeah. That's definitely, like, yeah, the big thing I think about in that episode. Nice. Well, I'm looking forward to reading that. I'm considering just rereading the books, because they're short, they're quick.
Yeah.
Um,
they're doable.
Yeah.
Up next, I got the Tales of Earthsea, which is a short story collection.
Nice. On the other hand, if there's like a 20-year gap between the books, I should be able to just like jump in, to be honest.
Yeah, you can probably do it.
It's just like real life.
Yeah, just like real life. I did not read these 20 years ago. I only read them like probably like 5 or 6 years ago or something.
Well, you gotta wait 15 now.
Ah, fuck.
Those were the rules.
Oh, man. Ah, shit. I watched Gundam way too quickly.
This is your penance.
Clearly. All right. Well, if that is everything, this is a very short segment compared to usual. However, we can get into the Return of Ultraman. Are we ready for Return of Ultraman?
Yeah. I like this week.
Let me tell you about... Let me just scan down and see if I like this week. I do like this week. All right, let me tell you about episode 40 of The Return of Ultraman. The Winter of Horror series, Phantom Snow Woman, featuring Snow Woman Monster Snowgon.
Actually, I just want to interject real quick.
Yes.
I do think it's funny hearing you both say, oh, I like this week. And when, like, as opposed to last week when it's like the pivotal moment of the show for most fans.
Look. It's fair enough.
I just think it's funny to highlight the our ways in which we are different from like from like the consensus, quote unquote.
Yeah, yeah. We're doing important work for Ultraman. It's just, you know, it is what it is. Let me tell you about an episode with a truly fantastic punchline.
Yep.
I'm glad we're all honed in on this. Jiro and Rumiko are going on a trip up a mountain. And while Go can't come because of work, he wants them to go on ahead without him and enjoy themselves. Matt is tasked with investigating the disappearance of couples who are presumed to no longer be on planet Earth for some reason. I don't know why they've assumed that. Dan stops and thinks, and when he hears this, and thinks, oh, well, they're not really a couple, so Go? Explain this gut feeling you're having. about Jiro and Rumiko, please. Explain yourself, sir. Meanwhile, Jiro and Rumiko are staying the night at a mountain lodge with a bunch of other people. The caretakers stop by and ask if there are any newlyweds, and a couple identifies themselves. The caretaker explains, oh, we have a special private cabin just for couples. And everyone has a laugh and sends them on their way, and a couple of guys like jokingly lament the fact they're single. Classic stuff. In the night, despite all the heaters being on, everyone in the cabins gets mad cold. Jiro steps outside for a sec and sees a young woman, one of the two caretakers, stood out in the snow looking pale as fuck. He goes back to bed, but the couple in the private cabin get attacked and disappear. The next morning, the caretakers claim they must have got embarrassed and left before daybreak. Jiro suspects something is up. Matt assesses some new disappearances, this time from mountain lodges. One thing the incidents have in common is that the caretakers for the lodges have received a false message asking them to return to their village before the couples have arrived. So presumably, someone is impersonating the caretakers, and whoever that is will be the primary suspect. Go finds out from a witness that the couple were frozen and then carried away by the caretakers. I've written okay. I meant Oka. Oka says it's like a Snow Woman story, and Ibuki's like, I've never heard of Snow Women targeting couples. Only single men, like every guy here but me. Captain Ibuki, I respect a hater, but she's only been dead 2 weeks. Truly. Wild. When Jiro and Rumiko return from their trip, they tell Go their suspicions about the vanishing couple. Go says it might be aliens, and Jiro does a comedy feint. Matt locates a UFO in the area of the disappearance, shoot it down. They find the couple inside and send them to a hospital. Now it's time to deal with the kidnappers. The team locates the false caretakers, and the old man says he's Alien Black from Saturn, and he transfers into Alien Black from Saturn. He reveals They were kidnapping couples so they could breed human slaves. It was fucked up. The young woman is in Snow Woman form, and she's got ice breath, and this puts the team out of commission. Go lasts a while longer, chasing the imposters, until he collapses and turns into Ultraman. The Snow Woman turns into the giant kaiju Snowgon, and now it's a fight. Snowgon freezes Ultraman, and then straight up dismembers him, takes him apart. And then Ultraman cheats and puts himself back together and destroys Snowgon no problem, using a new shield move to reflect an attack. Alien Black watches this and is like, the fuck? And Ultraman immediately vaporizes him.
This is the funniest thing that I've ever seen.
I missed it the first time.
Did you?
Because of how quick he turns around and hits him. And I was, because the episode just ended, I'm like, wait, what happened to the fuck? They didn't deal with the alien. And then I rewound and I went, oh no, they did. In 2 seconds.
The beat pew, bam.
I legit laughed out loud to this and then ended up recording myself laughing at it again the second time.
So good. I have never seen the spirit of Ultraman so perfectly summarized. Go returns to the team. Who have recovered and also come across the original caretakers that the aliens were impersonating. The day is saved and the team returned to base with the rescued caretakers in tow. The end.
Whoa, the other couples on Saturday.
I like this better than the first winter horror series, I think.
Mm-hmm. I think it is better. But also, what happened to the other people on Saturday?
Hey, don't worry about it. They're having a good time.
It's fine.
It's fine.
It's probably okay. Yeah, Go just doesn't do anything about Saturn. Now, Go, I'm not saying you need to, before Go goes off half-cocked, having heard my criticism, I'm not asking you to go genocide the people on Saturn. Please relax. However, we could save the slaves. We could maybe go save the humans that have been enslaved and are being used to breed more slaves. That sounds really fucked up. I think we could maybe do something about it. Go. You're just going home. We're playing the outro.
Well, you know what Ultraman says. So, like, you have to try to save yourself before you can save the Ultraman.
This is true. Ultraman does say that. He let fucking Pigmon die for the sake of teaching Ide the lesson that, well, no, you have to try to save yourself.
Another similarity between Ultraman and Ged, courtesy of Father Shore, is like, well, we can't kill the slavers. That'd be bad.
That'd be bad. Oh, I forgot about that. God, Ged. God, what the fuck?
I'm just imagining Go being like, well, there's like 140-something moons on Saturn. That's a lot of flying around. I don't know which one.
I feel like, you know, we've saved enough people.
If they're somewhere in the gas, that would be annoying.
yeah, he could put in a little effort. Barring this, I think, I think this is a pretty good episode. I think the whole like Jiro and Rumiko stuff in the cabin started like very obviously suspicious stuff going on and just being like keeping it to themselves and going like yeah, I'm sure they're just embarrassed. They're just embarrassed that they fucked and now they feel embarrassed. So now we're going to go home and then they tell Go. Oh, by the way, there was totally some weird shit going on the mountain. Please. I like all this.
Yeah.
Kind of weird, suspicious stuff going on in the first half of the episode.
Mm-hmm. Same.
Yeah, it's good.
I should note this is directed by Masanori Kake, who also directed the last winter themed episode last time, and then written by Toshiro Ishido, who you may remember as the cursed bone god Oxter dude, and what's the other folklore ish one, the one about the vampire that is Draculous, that one. Yes. So you remember, he was the one who's remembered as like, oh, he always has like a folklore-ish bent to, his stuff. So that's probably why the Snow Woman stuff is still forefronted here.
Snow Woman stuff going on. I did like there's an angle on this episode where like the aliens are taking advantage of a legend, but they have misunderstood it. They're not doing it right. they don't actually get what the, you know, Ibuki's like, no, snow women don't target couples. What's going on here? It can't be a snow woman. It's like, oh, yeah, we use the legend of the snow woman. And it's like, no, you didn't. No, you don't get it. We'll sit you down. You can try again. Yeah, as you know, I think the bit when Ultraman gets dismembered is pretty good. Metal's fuck. That's good shit.
He's deserved for his crimes.
Deserved for his crimes. Absolutely. And then cheats. Just fucking cheats again.
As usual.
As usual. Yeah. I don't have on. It's weird. I like this episode a lot. I don't really have much to say about it. It was just kind of fun.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just, yeah. You got frozen. It's funny.
It is funny.
Is it time to let this one go?
No.
Let this one go.
Oh, it's frozen. Shut the fuck up.
Yeah. Oh.
Let me just get my trivia stuff in.
You know, I've never seen Frozen.
You're fine.
Yeah, I have.
I was not saying I'm urgently on the way to watch it. Yeah. I'm saying
if you ever in your life play Kingdom Hearts 3, you'll see it.
That's never happening. I'm good.
I'm playing Kingdom Hearts 3 one day. Both Alien Black and Snowgon are designed by Akihiko Oguchi. Takano Batoya is in the Snowgon suit. I couldn't find any source on who was in the Alien Black suit. The special effects director for this week's episode was Yoichi Minota, who was also the director for the last horror series episode.
Nice. Very nice. Yeah, I think I think the motive of the aliens is, like, weirdly, like, fucked up for just, like, shoving into this kids show thing. But, you know, different times, I guess. You could just fucking throw that in there.
It does feel like an Ultra 7-esque plot.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Remember the episode where they just made women farms?
They did. They did just make women farms. But yeah, Alien Black getting fucked up is forever ingrained on my brain. It's going nowhere. That's the iconic moment
for
Ultraman now for me. It feels weird to move on so quickly, but if we have nothing else, we can move on to episode 41 of Return of Ultraman.
Listen, we recorded Mirror Man. We're allowed to.
We're allowed. Also, the next episode is the return of an old friend.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Revenge of Alien Bolton Jr. is the title I have. And featuring Alien Bolton Jr. I would have used the featuring to shout out the actual kaiju that gets fought this week.
I knew you'd like that kaiju.
I like this.
That's a good one.
I like this robot. It's a good robot. Jiro is having bad dreams about Ken. Tonight, Ken warns him about shooting stars. Jiro wakes up and sees a shooting star from his bedroom window, which hits a building that's in the middle of construction. It turns into Alien Bolton and then disappears. Jiro tries to tell Go about this, but leads with, "My dead brother told me," and Go is like, "All right, no, he didn't. You're having bad dreams. The dead do not talk to the living. Also, I'm your big bro now. Stop calling me Go-san. Please go to sleep." So Go is useless. Can't be dealing with Go. Jiro calls his friend Susumu, who has an interest in architecture. Now, I don't know why this little kid is taking an interest in architecture, but okay. Susumu agrees to investigate the building site and takes his dog Koro along with him. Koro steps in a patch of red paint, and this triggers a trap. The dog gets grabbed by a billowing cloud of smoke and vanishes. The shadow of Alien Bolton appears and tells Susumu, "I'm Bolton Jr. Go tell Matt about me." Susumu calls Jiro, but Go picks up, says, "This can wait until tomorrow," and hangs up. He's a little busy worrying about whether Jiro. about whether Jiro will ever stop having these dreams about Ken. The next day, Susumu decides to get started on the investigation early. and nags a bunch of construction workers about his theory that this building is alive. He points out a wall that doesn't match the blueprints, and the workers are dismissive. Susumu steps in the paint and gets abducted by the smoke. Matt arrives and Bolton laughs about how he's going to avenge his father and then shows a shadow of Susumu to Go and Kishida. They immediately shoot at a shadow of a child holding a dog. Their guns hit the wall. Their shots hit the wall and don't do shit. And they're like, what is that wall made of? Could be material from planet Bolton. And I go, what planet Bolton? Ain't that shit gone? Matt gather to investigate this properly, but they wind up chasing Jiro into the building because he's going to save his friend Susumu. He triggers the paint trap and Go pushes him out of the way. Go is almost got by the smoke, but he's rescued by the rest of the team. Unfortunately, not very well rescued. All the doors in the building are suddenly sealed and Matt is trapped. Go escapes by smashing a window and leaping out and landing in a pile of sawdust like it's Assassin's Creed. And then the building reveals its true nature as the artifice crumbles away and the golden parts assemble together to reveal the giant robot, Bill Gamo. Bill Gamo is a messenger from the devil, says the narrator. I'm like, hell yeah. Go turns into Ultraman but can't harm the robot while his friends are inside. Meanwhile, inside, Susumu and his dog have been released and the team stage an escape attempt using his knowledge of the building. They break out to the outside and descend from the robot by rope, while Ultraman tries to hold Bill Gamo perfectly still, for the safety of the team. With the team safe, Ultraman can fight properly and defeats Bill Gamo. Bolton Jr. turns up, says, you have not seen the last of me, Ultraman, and then flies away. And Ultraman's like, yes, I have, and shoots him out of the sky. And I can't tell whether this killed Bolton Jr. or not. Go returns to the team. And he and Jiro apologize to each other and jokingly settle on calling each other Senpai and Kohai. The end.
This is a good-ass episode.
Yeah, I like this one.
Shit's popping off.
I felt like I got the emotional closure I needed from the Sakata death stuff this episode.
Yeah.
With the stuff between Jiro and Go.
Yeah, I think it's nice they got a little bit with... Ken's voice actor coming back a little bit for the dream sequence. And, sometimes it just takes a bit. You don't feel the fallout for it right away. Is how I'm justifying it, even though it's obviously just yeah, let's put these Winter Horror Series episodes in between their deaths.
Yeah, lol.
The bit in here about how this is kind of an episode about Go realizing, okay, it would be irresponsible for me to try to be the new Ken in Jiro's life is, frankly, I think, personally speaking, just from, I feel like I've been on two sides of this, actually. I think this is just a thing a lot of men do, where it's I could maybe play this role for someone who needs something like this right now, and then maybe realizing a little bit, okay, no, that's not my place necessarily, or this isn't the same and we should not try to do that.
Yeah.
But instead, what I can just be is supportive and try to do my best to be there for that person. I have been both the Jiro and the Go in this situation at various points in my life, I think.
I think it's interesting that you get, at the end, it almost feels like Jiro is, almost more receptive to it. And feels a bit taken aback that Go is actually that was wrong. But I think he also maybe this is for the best as well, which I think is good too. It does feel funny when Go's I'm your bro now, Jiro.
Yes. I'm your big brother now. Just listen, you should immediately cease mourning. You're done now.
Take your antidepressants.
Yes. Take your pills, lie down, shut up, and, I'm here to help. And Jiro's thing is, he says, Go wants to be my big bro, but my big bro would listen to me when I tell him that I saw Bolton.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm gonna be honest.
Now, to be fair, I don't think Ken would do that.
I don't think Ken would. I do. Now, it's weird.
Let the
it's
record show that when Hiro was like, hey, there's a giant weird lizard outside my window. And Ken's like, ah, oh, it's probably just some lizard. Don't worry about it.
I was thinking about that.
Now, the grief has done this to them. Because Go would listen to Jiro when he mentions Bolton, when he mentions that he saw Kaiju. Go would usually, but because of the fact that it's about how Ken is dead now, he doesn't. So
that's damn.
Yeah. We're finding the character work. We're having to invent it a little bit.
You know, but... and you know whose grief we don't focus on enough?
Who?
Bolton Jr.
Now, we don't focus on Bolton Jr.'s grief. Let me tell you about Bolton Jr.'s grief, where he's like, I'm going to avenge my dad. And I'm like, just your dad? I was like, just him? Are you sure?
His father is the Bolton people.
His father. Oh, that's so good. That's great. Yeah.
I will say that it is a bit of a shame that Bolton Jr. doesn't do like the classic Bolton stuff.
Yeah.
He hasn't got the power set, or he doesn't got that iconic laugh.
There's nobody to train him.
He didn't learn the culture.
Oh no. He didn't get taught.
All he had was the leftover robots and architecture.
This is so sad. Bolton Jr. Oh man. We're inventing how good this episode is. I'm all for it.
He doesn't even know how to speak Bolton anymore.
No, he doesn't. Damn. That's some real shit.
See, what this episode should have been is Ghost going, you know what? I can't be a big brother to Jiro, but I can be a big brother to Bolton Jr.
Taking Bolton Jr. in.
Jiro, you have a new roommate. It's going to take some getting used to, but I think you'll get along just fine.
Will we ever... Now, this is a question. Mel can't answer this question. Will we ever get a team up with Bolton?
Ooh, I don't think so. I think Bolton are always going to be certified evil.
Oh, damn.
I can see other kaiju we've gotten before getting like the traditional supervillain thing of like, you've been around long enough, like, and at some point you just become a friend, maybe. But Bolton, I always see Bolton being a stock antagonist.
Damn.
I think of Bolton as, like, what Goombas are to Mario, Boltons are to Ultraman. Wow. Like, that's in my brain how that slots in.
Wow.
Damn.
Imagine if Mario wiped out all the Goombas.
Let's-a go.
God damn.
He is Italian.
But, you know, I guess... Your European heritage of any kind, you're at serious risk.
Yeah.
All right. Well, yeah. The kaiju in this episode is cool as hell. I love this robot. Combining robot. We haven't seen one since King Joe.
Yeah. But another gold
I'm
color.
I'm so happy we keep getting kaiju where it's like, oh, we can't kill it because there are people we like inside of it right now. We need to find a way to deal with that. Yeah, it's always fun.
I like the scene of Ultraman holding it as they rappel down.
Yeah, it's great.
It's good.
If I was Jiro's age and I had to do that, I would be freaking the fuck out.
It's really funny how Ultraman sees them rappelling, and then, like, he goes to, like, hold on to the kaiju, I guess. And then Rumiko shows up for the only time this episode to go, Ultraman, hold the kaiju in place so they can escape.
Thank you, Rumiko.
Get up on the Hydra's back.
yeah.
I will
go ahead.
Oh, I just will say, like, someone in our YouTube comments for last week's episode did comment that, like, they don't have confirmation of this, but they got the vibe that, like, the two-parter that killed Aki and Ken was more of a last-minute thing, and so that more of the last stretch of episodes may not have been written initially with them not being the show in mind, which maybe Maybe this should, some of the episodes have to be rewritten to account for the new status quo. But I feel like this episode obviously is more accounting for the fact.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I guess we'll see how those episodes fare in the future, but, you know.
Yeah.
I do like this episode acknowledging the thing happened, which is important.
Yeah. No, I feel like I... That, like, made that stuff from last week sit better for me, because it's like, okay, this is the type of stuff I would have wanted those episodes to focus in on a little bit more. So.
Damn.
It's good.
Yeah. I...
Probably my favorite episode this... Well, okay, we got an all-time guy next episode, but I like this one a lot.
Now, Brad, do you possibly like the guy that is just, like, floating around taunting the team, being a fucking asshole in the next episode?
Yep.
Okay, well, we're not getting to him just yet.
Yeah,
but...
we'll get there.
Yeah.
But while watching that, I was like, oh, everyone's gonna know who my favorite guy is coming into this recording.
Fucking alien poll number one. Susumu is in this episode. That's the most I can say about Susumu.
Most competent child. There was the child who actually tied up and kidnapped that other kid one time. But
most confident and complimentary.
Yes, most competent for the force of good.
It is funny that Jiro just says, "Hey, can you check this out for me?" And he just does. And then he's like, he's like, takes the blueprints for the architecture guy. He's like, oh, let me sell you these blueprints.
I love how just he looks at him for like 2 minutes and he's like, this wall's completely wrong. Are you all stupid? Basically.
Susumu is the protagonist of some other show. This was a secret crossover.
It's funny that like their gun, the Bolton wall doesn't work. It reflects guns, but the guy's cane can break through it.
Yeah,
which is how they get the bricks there.
You know, it's like a dune shield.
Oh, yeah, you're right. You're right. I'm going to be honest about the fight. I've watched the first part of that Dune movie. I'm going to be honest about the fights. I'm not convinced that a lot of those kill shots were slow. I think Jason Momoa, I think, was going quite fast with those Sarukha.
Yeah.
It is, you know.
I think it's funny he came out and was like, I don't think Duncan Idaho is a cool name. And I'm like, you don't get it.
You don't get it, man. Yeah, I mean, you don't get it.
I mean,
understand the vision.
Yeah.
It's important that he's called Duncan Idaho.
It very.
All right. Do we have directors and stuff for this episode?
Oh, we got some new guys. Oh, nice. So. Directed by Takaharu Saiki, who started working at Toei in 1954 and worked as an assistant director for many years. Eventually, he made his way into being a primary director and made his directorial debut with the 1964 film Mud Dog, which I could not find literally anything about. However, in 1965, 1 year later, there was a labor dispute in which Saiki was a very active voice. Toei president Hiroshi Okawa, kind of not liking this, transferred him from working at the film part of the company to the TV production part of the company, which, you know, apparently wasn't super thrilled by, but he stuck around for a little bit, primarily decided that he was going to work on TV from now on. Things he worked on included Spider-Man, Fireman, Return of Ultraman, and Kamen Rider Super 1. He also is noteworthy for being the main director on a magical girl tokusatsu show from 1990 called Bishoujo Kamen Poitrine, I believe is how you pronounce that, which is remembered as one of the more influential shoujo tokusatsu series from the early 90s. And apparently, like, there was a while there where it got parodied or, like, you know, people were making, like, visual gags of it, like, a lot, that sort of thing. Like, just kind of influential work from that time. Later on in life, he would retire, but every now and again, he'd be invited to, like, come back from a place to do some more, like, scattershot here or there, like, two-hour dramas or, like, made-for-TV movie-type stuff, it looks like. And he also did a couple documentaries he came out of retirement for. So, pretty normal guy.
He's not among peers.
Yeah. Then this was written by someone who I have two names for. So the booklet I have here credits him as Shuke Nagasaka, but then his full name seems to be Hideka Nagasaka. And I think Shuke, just by based off the credits I saw that have that, I this might have been the name he used when he was primarily doing like tokusatsu stuff. Maybe as a way to separate it from his quote-unquote more serious stuff. But he was apparently pretty green when he wrote this episode of Return of Ultraman. Like, when you look at this guy's involvement from the series from, like, the Return of Ultraman side of things, they specifically cite this guy as being one of the more rookie writers on the team. He decided to pursue a career in screenwriting after watching the film adaptation of the 1958 hard-boiled detective novella The Beast Must Die. After graduating from high school, he worked at a plastics factory, and then he eventually got a job at Toho Studio, serving as an art assistant for 5 years, and then, from there, he made his way to the television department's planning team, and then he finally, after many years, got a start writing TV shows. About 10 years after he graduated, he finally got to do the thing he wanted to do. He worked on several shows from this era, but the most notable one he seems to be remembered for is Android Kikaider. And most significantly, he made several story contributions that people remember him for. The first thing is that the other writers on the show, he felt, weren't emphasizing the protagonist's like moral struggle between choosing to do good or evil. And he decided, you know, I'm going to really key in on this for my episodes and really highlight it. And apparently a lot of those episodes are remembered because of that internal struggle for the protagonist. He also had a lot of say in the writing behind the creation of Hikaider, who is his primary rival in the show.
Noted, in the 1980s, cool he guy most... with a cool movie, Hikaider.
Yeah.
Yeah. In the 1980s, he mostly distanced himself from doing tokusatsu stuff. However, there was one anecdote which I thought was funny. Apparently, one day on TV, he caught an episode of Kamen Rider Black, and he went, "This is cool as hell." And he called up his old friend and Toei producer, Susumu Yoshikawa, and he told him that the price to get him to join the project was just too high. Like, they told him, like, you're too good at your job and you command too high of a price.
Damn.
To get you on board to this project.
Damn.
So he was not allowed to work on Kamen Rider
that
Black.
That fucking sucks. He's right. Kamen Rider Black is sick.
He did, however, go on to work on toku projects a little bit later. Notably, we are going to see him again contributing to Ultraman Zerth. So.
Cool.
I still don't know what that is, but Zerth is a good name. I like that.
Yeah.
It's like, it's Earth, but Zed.
Isn't Zerth the name of the thing from Boku Rano?
That is true.
I think it is.
I've seen the name Zerth in a bunch of contexts. So.
It is Zerth with a Z on front of it. It's you know, it's a slam. Yeah, it is. Zerth is Boku Rano as well. Boku Rano, fucking good. Highly recommend.
Wow. I want to see Hikaider at some point.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen the theatrical version of the Hikaider movie. Okay. There's a director's cut I can check out at some point. But yeah, I want to check out like the Hikaider and Hikaider 01 toku shows. Apparently they're like, at the time they came out, it was like, it was as big as on par with Kamen Rider, which I guess was like still doing 71/V3 at the time, so.
Mm-hmm.
It's more of like a niche thing, like, oh, that old show, in the way Mirror Man is, I guess now. But like at the time, it was like one of the big toku pillars of Toei.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I'm realizing, because I was like, this seems wrong. That was supposed to be, the producer's name was Susumu Yoshikawa. I forgot the S in Yoshikawa. Sorry about that.
Damn.
Oh.
Get fucked, Yoshikawa.
Yeah. Maybe you should pay your writers more.
Well. This episode's me. Fucking... Oh, go ahead. You got stuff. Go for it.
Yeah. Special effects director is Kazuo Sagawa. Both Bolton Jr. and Bill Gamow were designed by Kuji, and then Toya in a suit. Apparently, Bringing back Bolton Jr. was an effort to bring back old Kaiju to boost the ratings. You know what? Fair enough. Fair play.
Sometimes it's fun when you get the old guys back, too.
Yeah. Not you, Aita. I'll just also take this moment to highlight, basically the last special effects director I haven't got a chance to highlight in the show, because I started doing this basically the time he stopped being in the show.
Mm-hmm.
There's one of the previous special effects directors in the series was Koichiro Takano, who was the special effects director for episode 1 to 12 of Return of Ultraman. And then 16, 17, 20, 21, 26, 27, 30, and 31.
Okay.
And then I guess he stopped.
Wow.
Maybe this is around the time Mirror Man was happening, because he was on those first few episodes of Mirror Man. He was the director for like those first 12 episodes of Mirror Man, I think. So, mm-hmm. So
Mirror Man's fun. Oh God,
yeah.
Go listen to the episode, whether it's out or
I was about to say, listen to our Mirror Man coverage.
It will. Yeah,
it could be out now. It could be out after this. Who knows?
It will not be out. I guarantee. Cross my heart. Hope to die. It will not be out after this episode. It will be out before. If it's out after this episode, this will be really funny.
Yeah.
It will not be. It will already be out.
Yeah, it wasn't super long. It was like twice as long as Escaping the Cube, so I think that's a good length for it.
Yeah, it was good. Did you have anything else?
Nope, I'm good.
You're good.
I'll say this episode, I think, is the best of the bunch this week. It's not the one I enjoyed the most, but I do think this is one of the better episodes of the show. Alien stuff hits, big robots cool, good character emotional moments. It's everything you'd want out of a Return of Ultraman episode. It's mm-hmm. good stuff.
The resolution at the end between Jiro and Go, I think is good. I think they do it well. All right. Well, do we have anything else to say about episode 42 of The Return of Ultraman?
No, I am good.
That is a no. That is a solid no. Not 42, 41. I was looking at 42.
I was gonna wait and see if you realized your mistake.
I was looking at the summary for episode 42, and I read 42, and so I said 42. Damn. Oh well. So we're skipping episode 42, and now we're ending the show right now.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Episode 42 called "The Monster That Stands on Mount Fuji," featuring Mirage Monster Paragon. Is that title correct?
Yeah, like my favorite MOBA.
Yeah.
Hero Shooter. Fuck, I don't care.
Oh yeah, Paragon. Actually. Yes. featuring the voice of Amelia Watson. From All Alive English.
Wait, does it?
Yeah, you can make her the voice of the game telling you about objectives and things, I think. I think that's Paragon. Oh.
Funny.
Anyway. That's the Hololive quota for this week. You're welcome.
There you go.
Strange accidents are occurring nearby Mount Fuji. Cars are colliding with each other head on, and then the driver's insisting. It was the other guy that was driving on the wrong side of the road. People are out walking around, falling down ledges they were sure weren't there a second ago. Go is sent to investigate and gets into a similar car accident, though he escapes unscathed by doing a flip. Skill issue. Go's investigation leads him to discover these accidents only happen on sunny days and only on days where there is a cloud cap on Mount Fuji. Go watches another car crash, and decides to snipe the cloud with a laser. The cloud disperses, revealing a kaiju. The rest of Matt flies out to attack, and the locals cheer them on. Go gets on the radio and says, please do not eyeball it. The kaiju can probably bend light. And Ibuki is like, I mean, I can see it. It's right there. I can see it quite clearly, so I don't know what the problem is. Immediately, two of the planes crash into each other, and the pilots eject, while the other two try to fire lasers, which the kaiju just bounce back, because lasers are light. Idiot. when the sun sets, the kaiju disappears. This kaiju will surely return in the morning, so the team has to be ready for it. Overnight, they are menaced by alien Stora from Galaxy Number 7, who brags about his kaiju Paragon. Matt will never defeat Paragon, says Stora. Stora reveals this is all part of a plan to turn the Earth into a vacation home, and if Matt surrenders, then humanity will be allowed to live. Matt don't really like those terms, so they say, fuck you, we'll kill you. And Stora's like, how? I have the power to bend light. Am I over here, or over there, or behind this rock? And then he laughs at them and vanishes. I
fucking love this guy.
he's an asshole. He's good. Matt decide to stage another attack tomorrow, this time while flying by instrument and using radar to target Paragon. Kishida trusts in guided missiles, and Go is like, but what if... And Kishida is having none of it. Do not doubt the science.
It's funny. There's just like... Kishida's like, do you doubt our science, Go? And Go is like, well, actually, my concern is based in science.
Yes, yes. Do you doubt our science?
He's like, well, you can consider that radar involves light and electromagnetic waves.
It's very, very silly. The morning comes, the attack kicks off, and Ibuki launches missiles at where his radar says the kaiju is. And on the ground, Go and Minami and Ueno find themselves dodging Ibuki's missiles. Ibuki tells Kishida, he's like, ah, okay, we have to abort the attack immediately. And Kishida isn't—he's not having none of it. He is firing off missiles like it's Ace Combat, and not only the team on the ground, but the locals as well have to evade this destruction. Matt will be finished if Kishida is allowed to continue. Go turns into Ultraman and Spacium beams missiles out of the sky. Then he uses the bracelet to apply vibrations to solar waves, and this reveals Paragon's location. Ultraman fights Paragon and finishes the kaiju off by toppling it into Mount Fuji to burn in the volcano. This also, through some connection, immolates the alien Stora. Goodbye, alien Stora. When Go returns to the team, Kishida wonders if it truly is Go or just the light playing tricks on them. Ueno charges into Go, topples over, and observes that, yeah, that's the real Go. They all have a good laugh. The end.
That was fun.
Yeah. Alien Stora. The highlight of this episode is there's just this extended scene at night where the most they can get Alien Stora to do is just hover and just like move left and right while this really distorted this voice that sounds like it sounds like the guy from the meme where he's going, I am under the water, please help me. It just sounds like that for the whole thing while he's going, yeah, you suck. You can't do shit against me. I'm thinking of turning your planet into, like, a vacation home. Does that sound okay with you guys? And they're like, no. And he's like, oh, no, they say. Lol. He rules.
Yeah.
There is an investigation portion of this episode that I do quite like. I thought it was going to go longer. It did not go very long at all. But you know, it was fine.
I think it's funny that,
What's his name?
It's funny that like Go crashes into the guy and like the guy's pretty good natured about it.
Yeah. He's just like, you know, it was probably my fault. And Go's like, no, listen, this has been happening. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, everyone else is getting extremely angry at each other all the time.
The stuff with everyone dodging Kishida's missile barrage is incredible.
He has so many missiles. He's got so many. It's fucking... It ain't even Ace Combat 0 out here. It's Ace Combat 6. The missions are too long, and they've given you 400 missiles. Damn, bro. Just firing them off like nothing. That costs a lot of money. Anyway. Kishida kind of losing it up in the jet is pretty fun. While everyone else scrambles on the ground. You get, like, lots of the locals yelling at Matt going like, damn the Monster Attack team. And there's a guy pulls out a rifle and starts aiming it into the sky. I'm like, what are you gonna do? What else is happening in this
episode? I think if we see a new defense team in Ultraman Ace, we'll know why.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, this is the controversy.
This is a hard one.
So now we have to identify what were the controversies that dissolved the Ultra team and the SSSP.
The Jamila papers came out for the SSSP.
You're right. It was it was E-Day that leaked them.
Yeah. 100%.
Maybe the Ultra Guard is just like the aliens didn't come for a while, so they just defunded them.
Oh yeah, and then God, yeah, that's gotta suck to be in the Ultra Guard. You're just kind of chilling for a while there. we haven't seen Jun. Jun was in Return of Ultraman as well for a bit, for a couple of episodes.
Yeah, we haven't seen Kishida's uncle either, for that matter.
Oh, Kishida's uncle hasn't been around in forever. We should get his uncle back. I liked Nepo Baby Kishida.
I mean, he's still a Nepo Baby. He's
still a Nepo Baby. He's been less of a hater lately. Because him and
this Go... This episode's from more hater energy.
He's got more hater energy this episode, but he's still, generally speaking, on the whole, best bros with Go. Ibuki, I'm not convinced that spending all that money on this cool actor guy was worth it for Ibuki. This is just a guy. This is just completely generic guy. I think the one time it worked, it would have worked better when it was the older guy. It was the episode where he's dressed as the priest.
Yeah, I agree.
That was when he was at the coolest.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the thing is, that's kind of an inherent part of dressing your captain up as a priest. as like this mysterious guy telling, like, inciting Go to go save the world or whatever. I mostly just thought this episode was fun. I thought it was pretty decent.
Yeah.
Set piece stuff. Oh, go ahead.
I like the part where, like, the illusion is that Paragon's really big, and Ultraman, like, lands next to him. It's like, oh, no, even I'm dwarfed.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Ultraman flies up, is really tiny, and then when the illusion is revealed, it's a normal-sized kaiju. By which I mean it's giant, but not that giant.
Yeah.
Honestly, Ultraman is lucky he doesn't encounter giants that are more giant, because you'd figure they would exist... There's always a bigger fish.
Yeah.
In the words of Liam Neeson. There's always a bigger dream.
In the words etc.
Yeah.
I think this is just a fun, like, oh, we got a wacky monster and we have an excuse for cool special effects episode.
Yeah.
It's not trying to be anything incredible, but what it's... You know, it's aiming to just be, you know, here's a fun little Ultraman monster of the week thing going on here, and that's it.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Solid episode.
Do we have production notes?
Let me open up the booklet. It's returning people. So this was also directed by Takaharu Saiki. And then written by Toshihiro Ishido, which I don't really feel like this was really all that folklore-y. So this is like a little bit of a break from that. So
it does. And now, on the other hand, it does have that thing where it's like it's based around like it's only during the daytime. It's only when there's a cloud cap around Mount Fuji, and it's to do with like. Weird incidents.
Superstition.
Weird incidents of, like, I was sure that I was on the right side of the road. That kind of thing. I can see the vibe. A monster that lives on the top of the mountain. Yeah. It's that kind of thing. Speaking of the kaiju, do you have any notes about the kaiju? Oh, yeah, yes. It is the kaiju that we're talking... Yes, it is. I've almost forgot the format. Go for it, Mal.
Anyway, another Gucci design on both fronts. I don't know if there's a suit actor for Stora, but it could have been a puppet for all I know. The Paragon suit actor, because there's two of them, is Toya, and then also Kanemitsu Arikawa, because this is another suit where you put two people in it.
It is.
It was designed with like similar inspiration as Dodongo, which is the dragon from episode 13 of Ultraman.
Mm-hmm.
But this time they're like, Dodongo suit, the person in the back was having a rough time because he had to bend over, so they made the tail more upright and had a compartment inside it, so this way the person in the back would be like able to stand in a Paragon suit. And the special effects director was Kazuo Sagawa.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Do we have anything else to say about this episode? What are we missing?
One of the greatest aliens of all time.
He's fantastic. What a perfect
alien. He's a fun guy.
I feel like we have blitzed this today. Absolutely remarkable. Yeah. You know what? I'll take it. I'll take it just this once. Because we did talk about Mirror Man for like an hour and something. So works for me. Do we have color timers?
Yeah, I got color timers and the other stuff I gotta do.
Mm-hmm. Go for it.
So color timers, episode 40, 3:34.
Over.
Episode 41, 6:19.
It's way over. What the
episode
fuck?
Episode 42, 4:58.
Getting, but you know, come on. 6 minutes?
We weren't even trying this week.
What's the longest we've had? We had like the last week we had that. It was really long because he was trapped.
17 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
6 minutes ain't been that. But yeah, 6 minutes is still long. All right. Well, Mal, hit us with some stuff.
The LGQ won back. First of all, I must apologize. I got the special effects directors last week wrong.
Oops.
Dun, dun, dun. So for last week, Toru Matoba was the one for episode 10. This Super Express Goes West. And then Keiji Kawakami did episode 11 and 12, which is a Balloonga and I Saw a Bird. And because there's no new kaiju to bring up, I'll just say right here. Episode 15, which is the Pegula Round 2, was also done by Kawakami. Also, since I mentioned it, here's M1's original design, which I think is a lot better.
Oh, that is better than the original, than what we got in the end.
Yeah, I like this.
This is a creature. I like this.
Anyway, this week's a bit stacked. Because we got some classic guys in this one.
All right.
First up, Garamon.
Hell fucking yeah.
Special effects director for both Garamon episodes was Matoba. The suit actor for Garamon was Minoru Takahashi. He was chosen because he was small and the Garamon suit was small.
Nice.
The reason they made the suit small is because, if you remember, there was the dam set and they didn't want Garamon to tower over the dam too much.
Mm-hmm.
The designer, as designer sculptor duo that we know, Taro Narita and Ryosaka Takayama. Wikipedia, the wiki apparently made sure to note, hey, the suit is made of urethane and latex. Thanks. Apparently the original plan was for Goro to reappear in an episode called Goro versus the Space Monster with Garodama, the episode meant to be like a prequel setup episode where I guess like the meteor falls and the space monster comes and then Goro would fight it. For whatever reason, Goro versus Space Monster was scrapped, which means that Garurudamon is reworked, and the Garurudamon reworked in the process, becoming a robot instead. Mm-hmm. Though apparently a concept for Garurudamon was that it was being an alien creature that like absorbed the wildlife of the area, with as more of a Chimera motif, and you can kind of see that bit in like its more skeletal hands. Cool. Because Garurudamon was really popular, episode 13 was the first colorized episode of Ultra Q.
Okay.
That makes sense because it's like kind of the quintessential Ultra Q monster.
Mm-hmm.
There's a weird anecdote when filming the Garurudamon episodes where apparently there was an incident near the Super Eye studio where a kid, there was a monster sighting near a park, but apparently it was a kid playing a prank where he got like a, it said stuffed toy, but maybe it was a suit from storage? I'm not sure. But in any case, apparently at some point in the kerfuffle, the Garurudamon suit almost got lost, and they almost had to cancel filming of the episode, which is...
Oh, damn.
Thank God they didn't.
Yeah, it's a good one. Well,
wait, so a kid stole...
The follow-up is a good one.
So a kid stole the suit... And someone reported it as an actual monster sighting to the police.
Yeah, well, I don't know if a kid stole the suit. It says stuffed animal, but I also seen stuffed thing applied to...
Okay.
I don't know. I'm not 100% specific, but something happened.
Something happened. All right.
And you know what else is a classic guy?
Who?
Kanagon.
Hell yeah.
Matoba also directed this episode. The suit actor was Haruyoshi Nakamura, and once again, Toru Narita, Ryosaku Takayama. Just a hunch, I feel like the Ultra Q monsters that are most like classic guys in the Ultraman sense are probably going to be Toru Narita's eyes.
Mm-hmm. You know, he had some bangers.
Yeah.
He went out in a really funny way, and so I have to laugh at him every time he's brought up.
So the head of Kanagon was based on a Gamauchi coin purse and also a seashell. Apparently, they kind of based the torso off of a pregnant woman for some reason. Reason being is that the protruding belly plus the inclusion of a tail was meant to help make the suit more balanced for the person inside it.
Okay.
There's also considerations made for the suit actor's fingers in the suit, because Kanagon would be picking up coins in the episode, so yeah, they didn't want like the dexterity there. The writer of the episode, Mashiro Yamada, based the script off of his son, who was apparently bad at math, but really good with money in terms of counting money, so
damn,
that's funny.
It really says a lot about our society.
Apparently, Kaneo's actor, child actor, was... already hit puberty, so they dubbed him over with a woman who could make him sound more convincingly like a child.
That's silly. that's ridiculous. Okay.
Also, with respect to the episode director, Harunosuke Kagawa and Nakagawa, even though Ultra Q was filmed at 35mm film, like in theaters, he said that Nakagawa filmed at like a 60mm something. I forget the exact wording, but it was like...
Yeah, I remember this. I think we talked about this.
Something about his filming for this episode was like... Or his style was a 60mm kind of like target range. And I get the impression that this was more wasteful for the film, ? Or maybe it was an effort to save film. By the way, the result was the crew would give him the nickname Harugon the Film Eater.
I see.
I wish I knew more about film to understand.
Mm-hmm.
What that was about. Anyway. Last guy. From Garurudamon Round 2, the Cicada Man.
Also classic, yeah. Man.
Also, once again, Topa to the special effects directorship of the episode. Once again, Narita, Takayama sculpted the body, but apparently Akira Sasaki did the head. maybe it says the suggests that maybe in like the script or something or internally he is referred to as a Planet Man, which is why I bring that up.
Planet Man Dan.
The Ultra Wiki also says that he's referred to as Alien Q sometimes, which is funny, but I don't think this is it. Apparently, originally the eyes were not luminous, but this was changed just before filming. And the Cicada Man heads would later be reused to mold the Bolton head for Ultraman.
Oh, I can see it.
And on that note, I have a bonus trivia.
Bonus. Hit us.
Because some of you remember that the Cicada Man was not only in Ultra Q as far as shows we covered.
Oh, it was in Blazer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we got. I ended up finding some Blazer trivia.
Go for it.
Obviously, the fact that there was a cello case as a MacGuffin in that original episode was the impetus for making a music themed episode based around Garamond and the Cicada people.
Mm-hmm.
Originally, the staff were going to pick some existing classical music, but the episode director for the Blazer episode was Tomonobu Koshi, and he was a fan of the musician Hideki Toki, who played the main guy in the band. He was a fan of that guy since he was a student, so he was like, hey, I'm a fan of your work. You want to make like, an original song for the show? And he agreed. And that was like the main... That was the main track we got, besides like, you know, the Ultra cover. That was the one main one in the fight against Garamond and Earth Garamond in that episode.
Mm-hmm.
I think I got the impression that there was like a two versions recorded. There was like a pre-recorded one they put over the footage, as well as the one they performed on the stage that was being filmed. And the musicians, when they watched back the episode, were really like impressed and taken aback by like how much care was put into like melting their like making their performance like look good and also melting into the plot and stuff. Mm-hmm. Like making it feel like it mattered, like, you know, and they were like really they really appreciated like they shoved the ads to the first half of the episode so they didn't cut off their musical performance.
Yeah.
And just a note, Hideki Toki, you know, the lead musician guy, ended up having like sharing a dressing room with a not necessarily, I don't know if a dressing room per se, but like ended up interacting a lot with Konami Naito, who is the actress for Henri, and they ended up becoming friends, and they went to concerts together, which is fun.
Nice.
And yeah, I feel like maybe when we eventually do the Blazer movie, I'll just quickly go over the directors and writers of that show's episodes, because we didn't do that when he did Skipping the Queue.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably worth doing, because I think the info's out there now. So.
Yeah. All right. Well, unless we have any emails.
We got one email, but it's not a subject or one. It's
a short one. Okay, shoot.
This one's by... I forget if you were... Is it your first time or you came before? I'd like to note the possibility that Shin Hayato does not actually appear in episode 38, but it might instantly be that Ultraman chooses to use his appearance as Seven does. Which would be really funny.
It's so fucked up.
He really likes Hayata. He like what was there for Ultraman to like about Hayata? Oh, Ultraman liked Hayata because he kept quiet, because he didn't assert his personality in the duality at all.
I need a man who won't take his hand off the lever.
He's just like absolutely just like, oh, what a perfect human being that was. Just didn't have any opinion about any problem that we encountered whatsoever. I was free to nuke shit.
They also mentioned that there's some shenanigans with respect to Ultraman 2, quote unquote. Yeah, they mentioned a recent YouTube short, but I don't know what the YouTube short is, so I don't know. If he can send that, maybe that'd help. But yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, there's once and once again that there was, like, you know, stuff at the time calling him New Ultraman, so.
I see. Well, yeah, it would be pretty surprising to be watching a show called Return of Ultraman, and then suddenly the original Ultraman returns, and you're like, well, who's this guy then? Who is he?
The new Ultraman.
No, he's not Ultraman, clearly. He's someone else.
I think in the email, it's just like, yeah, because like Shin can mean new. He'd be called Shin Ultraman, so sometimes he's called Shin Man for short.
Which is not to be confused for with the Ultraman who is Shin Hayata. Yeah,
the Shin Ultraman.
the new movie, Shin Ultraman.
Or the Ultraman who is Shin Hayata's Ultraman.
Yeah.
You know, curiosity has gotten the best of me. I'm just going to go on the Ultraman wiki right now and search Brad. Bradford Hill?
Don't spoil yourself too much.
Okay. Oh, it's a dub actor. Okay.
There's already a red man.
Wait! Blood Power or Brad Power is a bat. Okay, no, this is a guy. We're going to get to Brad Power at some point.
Okay. Excellent. Good.
Incredible.
I'm glad we know about Brad Power now.
Yeah.
I hope that this is a build up now to a guy who is completely inconsequential.
Yeah.
All right.
We need our build ups.
We've got, you know, we've got Ultraman Ace coming up.
Yeah.
That's going to be pretty soon.
I end up getting some feedback on the two-parter situation.
Ah.
Excellent. Apparently there's actually, as it plays out, there'd be no episode bisected by our 3x3 coverage, which is funny.
Oh, okay.
So Jigsaw suggested maybe just doing, oh yeah, you can save the 4 episodes by the end, but I'm like, I don't know.
That's a lot. It's still a lot. Yeah. Like, yeah. We prefer to do a 4-episode one somewhere in the middle just because the first episode is gonna run long, and the last episode is gonna run long.
Yeah,
just by their nature. Yeah,
I did some science because, like, for whatever reason, our Alt Q finale is like a really normal length. And my conclusion seems to be one: it only takes us half an hour to get to the shows, which helps, as opposed to the Ultraman and Ultra 7 finale where it takes us like an hour.
That's just us.
And then, yeah, and then. Episode like the Ultra 7 and Ultraman finales, we also spent like half an hour talking about the finale, but then we go another half hour just talk about the shows itself. And you know, for the Ultra Q finale, we're just like, we finish talking about the last episode and go for 2 minutes, yeah, I like the show. And then that's it.
Damn, for real, we should have given Ultra Q a little more credit.
Yeah, it was actually kind of for real, just like, yeah, damn, we only spent that much
time. That's still my favorite show of the ones we've watched, if I'm being honest.
And then also for both other finales, we also just have like a 20-minute extra bit in the middle that we do as a bonus that also lengths the episode. So, you know.
20-minute bonus in the middle, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, because we did like the...
Yeah, for the unmade Ultra 7 shit.
Oh, yeah, and yeah.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah, that's true. So...
And our the best thing we've ever done, the skip list.
The skip list horrifies me every time I think about it.
I stand by every word we said.
And then this time we'll have Anno's Ultraman Return of Ultraman fan film. But yeah, presumably, if we didn't have a random bit for Ultraman Ace, then it wouldn't make it go too much longer. But also, we're not to risk it, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
I got another feedback that's like, there's a good part in the 20s immediately following a two-parter, which isn't a bad place to just tack it on an episode at the end. So,
all right,
we might just go with that route.
Might just go with that.
Okay.
I have a tentative schedule, so yeah, I think we'll just do that then. And then also, I'll just say right now, there is a singular episode of Ultraman Ace where I will provide the subs to you too.
Okay.
For the disagreements with the modern translation choices of a particular episode within the official release.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I got for now.
Cool. Well then, I think that's an episode of the podcast.
Yeah.
I think we're done. This might be quite short, but you know, that's fine. I think it's a decent length. All right. If you want to follow the show, you can do so at @ultra_Q. That is at @ultra_QUEUE. I'm also on Twitter. I'm @gender_redacted. Mel.
Hi, you can follow me at DickRounds on Twitter and on Blue Sky. We have the email ultraqpod@gmail.com. The finale of Return of Ultraman is coming up. So, you know, if you have any burning questions for the finale that you want to save, feel free to send them in, even if you like don't necessarily have anything week to week. But, you know, we take week to week with emails too. Those are always nice. And we also have the coffee, Ultra Q Fund, which presumably was for funding subtitles, but we'll see how that goes.
Mm-hmm.
I did find like one other thing that I'd like to get at some point, but you know, that's
it's a big project.
Like, yeah. I did see there's like the I mentioned before, like Akio Josoji's Alt Q radio show from the aughts, which I like to get CDs of. But that's sort of like the last, I think, big Ultraman thing that we gotta get.
Mm-hmm.
But then everything else is like, oh yeah, I've got subtitles for it. If you or anyone you know knows how to do subtitles, prostrating myself, please.
Mm-hmm.
I have a list. Your service is needed. Anyway, Brad, you go.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at @B_invoked. That's @B_invoked, invoked. Then you can also find my YouTube channel at Canopus Invoked. That's Canopus, CANOPUS space INVOKE. YouTube's probably going to be dead for a little bit here while I get some shit squared away at work and doing personal, like, busy stuff. But yeah, hopefully I'll have stuff out soon, so.
Sick. All right. If? Why did I say if? I said if like I was going back into the plugs again. Join us next week for 3 more episodes of The Return of Ultraman. You know, like Mel said, we're coming up on the finale very soon. I don't know exactly how soon. When is that?
We got three weeks.
Damn, it's close. All right. See you there. We missed a... I feel like those frozen people got better. I feel like we had a medical miracle.
Did we?
Oh.
Which ones?
The frozen people are no longer frozen by the end of the Snow Woman episode. Oh, that is true. Oh,
sure. Okay, you know what?
I believe in medical
miracle. Ultraman, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your service.
My favorite part is I have to pretend to hear that still because I have the OBS recording going.
Brad, every time, right, every time that happens, listener, I want you to understand, I hear it. Mel hears it. Brad hears fucking nothing.
There's just an awkward silence that I have to intuit.
The first time we did this, Brad didn't know what was going on.
Yeah, that's why he didn't laugh.
Yeah.
Brad had no idea what was happening. All right. That's the episode. Goodbye. See you next week.
Goodbye, everyone.
Goodbye.
わすぞ地響き立てて吠える怪獣大怪獣ふわっと開いた口から炎あたり一面焼けの腹 間違ってない。しか迫る。帰ってきたぞ。ウルトラマン。十字を組んで狙った敵は必殺技の贈り物大地を飛んでキック一発近くに寄ってウルトラチョップ 凶悪怪獣
倒すため帰ってきたぞ帰ってきたぞ帰ってきたぞウルトラマンウルトラマンウルトラマン戦い済んで見上げる空にひとつ輝く僕の星遠く離れて地球にひとりあれがあれがふるさとだ正義と平和を守るため帰ってきたぞ帰ってきたぞ帰ってきたぞウルトラマンウルトラマンウルトラマンウルトラマンウルトラマンウルトラマン